You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Why don't we go ahead and get started? My name is Richard Bush, and I'm the director of the Center on Northeast Asian Policy Studies here at Brookings. And it's my great honor, on behalf of my president, Strobe Talbott, who is in India and couldn't make it back for today's event, to introduce our speaker. They say that all good things must come to an end, and so regrettably, it's time to say farewell to our good friend Ichiro Fujisaki, the ambassador of Japan to the United States, at least in his official capacity. Ambassador Fujisaki has served his country very well over the decades of his career. He has worked to broaden, deepen, and strengthen the U.S.-Japan alliance. And in that task, he was most challenged a year and a half ago in the wake of the Tohoku tragedy. But it's our real honor here at Brookings to host him for today's talk. We certainly hope that it won't be the last time we see him at Brookings. The plan for this afternoon is that Ambassador Fujisaki will give his remarks, and then we'll have some time for questions and answers, which will be moderated by my colleague Maria Solis, who's our Phil Knight Chair in Japan Studies. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming Ambassador Fujisaki.
Such a big crowd. Wow. Richard Bush was saying, I'm leaving soon. I thought this was something like a commencement exam. And my only desire was that I would flunk the exam and Richard would say, no, you can't leave. But he's not saying that. I'm going to be staying for another 1 month, because your election is there, and I think I'll see through the election. Looking forward to tonight's debate as well. And as ambassador here, diplomat here in Washington, I was in a breakfast meeting as well, and this morning I'm always encountered with a question. Which candidate does your country like? Which country do you prefer? A standard answer for a diplomat, do you know what it is? It's like a Christmas gift. You don't say anything till the day. You open the box and say, this is just what I wanted. The only difference is that you can't get the receipt and go and change it. No. I've been here 4.5 years, and I often encounter friends saying, this 4.5 years was such a quiet one for you, wasn't it? And I am a bit puzzled first. Why do they say that? And come to think of it, maybe that's because of me. Because in Washington, I don't know why, but I encounter people and they say that, how are you doing, I would say. And they would say, oh, I was busy. I was in Beijing. I was in Tokyo. I was in Tel Aviv. And everyone, this is such a nice town, but everyone has to be 80% of the town traveling all the way. And so I made a rule to say that when I'm asked, oh, nothing's happening. It's so quiet. That was my rule. So now people would ask me that, oh, you had such a wonderful, quiet 4 years. And it's not that exactly that. There were some things, too, in that 4.5 years. And I would just touch upon three of them. First, the biggest thing happened was this 3/11 disaster, earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear accident. Such a huge accident that no humankind has ever experienced. And 1 week after that, not even 1 week, 4 days after that, Strobe Talbott, Richard Bush was kind enough to invite me here, and I was able to convey what was happening in Tokyo, in Japan, and also convey our gratitude. So I will not repeat it, but we are now on the road to recovery, thanks to American people. People around the world helped us, but on top of the list were Americans. American soldiers, American government, American people, American church, American NGOs, American kids as well. So Japanese people will never forget the friendship shown by Americans. So again, I would reiterate that from bottom of heart, representing all Japanese. Thank you very much. Arigatou gozaimasu. One small report about this 311. There were a lot of debris in Japan, but some floated out to Pacific, still floating. And there were concerns expressed, especially on the West Coast. So we have studied this, discussed with Tokyo, and came up with a proposal. That is to extend $5 million. And this was expressed by Prime Minister Noda to Secretary Clinton in Vladivostok a month ago. We don't have any legal obligation, but we know, one, that much of that is from Japan. Secondly, we were helped enormously, Americans. So it's a token of gratitude that we will be trying to help this debris issue. We don't know how much it'll be, effect of debris will be, but finally, because we thought there's Alaska, Washington, Oregon, California, and Hawaii that would be mainly affected. On this 311, I would touch upon two issues regarding that. One is economy, and one is energy, of course, related. Economy, it has been a practice in some part of the world saying that Japan has been stagnating for two decades. Some people would say that's because of weak leadership in Japan. A very respectable magazine, Economist, I think many of you read, at least subscribe. I'm sorry. had an cover last year. Some of you may remember this one. This is President Obama and Chancellor Merkel clad in something. I think they wanted to make it like kimono or yukata, but it doesn't look like to me. But the message is that don't try to follow the step of Japan. Economic paralysis, political paralysis there. We shouldn't follow the step of Japan. I think this is an exaggeration. If you look at the economy of Japan, after we changed the policy of economy to deregulation, restriction in around the change of the century, turn of the century, from 2003 to 2008, average GDP growth for Japan was 1.8%. Eurozone was 2.1. The U.S. was 2.7. So Japan was lower than Eurozone or United States, but it was within 1% point range. However, in 2008, Wall Street crash started. That started from this country, but hit Japan most because Japan produced products that were automobiles or electronics where you can wait to buy. So Japanese industrial output went down by 22% in 2009. Trade export went down by 33%. GDP went down by 5.5%, the lowest in 50 years, 2009. And as a comeback kid, we started to come back again. In 2010, GDP growth was 4.4%. Some of you may remember. I have a good memory. No, it's 2.2, 22, 33, 5.5, 4.4, so it's easy to remember, isn't it? No. And then this 311 came. We were to grow in 2011 by 1.7%, but it went down to minus 0.6. So that we are again on recovery road. 2012, we are looking at 2.2%, but you can see how big the effect was of this 311. So I'm not attributing everything to external causes, but without taking into consideration this effect of Wall Street crash and 311 and just say that Japan has been stagnating is a little too simplistic view. Now, talking about economy, I have to touch upon trade. In 20 years ago, 70% of U.S. trade deficit was coming from trade with Japan. Now it's down to 10%. The biggest country which is making U.S. trade deficit, of course, is China. Next is Eurozone, and third is Mexico, and we're number four. So we don't hear about trade friction. So now what we're talking about is more a future-oriented, positive issue regarding trade. And the issue ahead of us is whether Japan should join Trans-Pacific Partnership, TPP, they call. We have not decided yet, but I would like to put out two or three points that is important. According to basic policy, we have made clear that while taking into consideration the sensitivity of products, we would put everything on the table for trade liberalization negotiation. Second, we will try to have high ambition in the negotiations. Third, we will not try to delay it, the negotiation, if we are going into the negotiations. So there may be misunderstanding that Japan is saying that we're not putting everything on the table or whatever, but the basic policy that government has adopted clearly stated that. What I would like to see is that all the countries, including the United States, would not try to raise the bar for others to get into negotiation. Let's do the negotiations on the negotiating table, not before the entrance fee. I'm talking about the entrance fee. Now, second on energy. Energy is a huge issue. In 2010, the government adopted a basic policy in which, at the time, dependency on nuclear power generation was 26% of our electricity. And the plan was by 2030, we would double it, the dependency to about 50%. That was the plan adopted in 2010. But 1 year later, this 311 happened. Changed the scene dramatically, totally changed the scene. 311 was a big accident. However, it was very different from Chernobyl. In Chernobyl, nuclear reactor exploded. There was no container vessel. So radioactive material discharged in Chernobyl was seven times larger than Fukushima Daiichi. There was immediate, more than 30 people died. No death toll in Fukushima immediately. So it's a very different accident, but still it had a huge impact. Come to think of it, there were 3 miles in the United States, and after 30 years, U.S. was not able to make a single nuclear power plant on U.S. soil. So accidents have a big impact. After that impact, the accident, Germany said they would retreat from nuclear power generation. Swiss said they would retreat as well. Italy, they didn't have any, but they said they would retreat as well. And France, President Hollande, when he was candidate, said he would decrease the dependency on nuclear from 75 to 50. And Japan. Now, if you look at polls, about the average, 30% of people think that Japan should abandon nuclear power generation. 40% say that we should decrease the dependencies. Altogether, 70% think that we should not maintain the current level. So the ministers concerned came up with a plan, saying that it's not a cabinet decision. It's several ministers' concerns, a view that we should aim at exerting at most effort to attain nuclear zero in 2030s. Business communities are not totally with it. So we have to really define our energy policy in the years to come. This is a very basic issue that relates to economy as well. And we have to cope with 2 or 3 very important issues. One, how can Japan be competitive? Japanese product would be competitive in world market without that power generation. Second, alternative sources like natural gas. U.S. has not started to export it to Japan because of the Natural Gas Act, and the Department of Energy is reviewing it. And some of the senators saying that they should keep it in the United States in order for the prices of energy. But Japanese Prime Minister said he would like to have the United States starting to export natural gas to Japan, and the President said it's under study, so he cannot say it, but he shares the concern that Japan's energy security is important for the United States as well. This was April 30th this year. Thirdly, issues that we have to keep in mind is that if all these countries, France, Japan, and others that I have mentioned, is decreasing the dependency on nuclear, those who will be increasing and who could continue to supply in the future will be very limited countries like Russia, Korea, Republic of Korea, China. So implication of that in world politics economy has to be evaluated as well. But I'm not saying drawing any conclusion of that we have to cope with these issues. This is what I'm saying. Now, turning to security issue, this is what we had to face. Some 3 years ago, there were discussion about East Asian community and these countries in Asia should look at the possibility of having a community of their own. Now, I don't hear that too much. I think the notion that anything in Asia should involve the United States is more there. I'm not saying that it's there's a consensus, but I think predominantly so. And U.S. presence is more and more appreciated. We had an issue of relocation of the Marine Air Force Base called Air Station called Futenma in the southern part of Okinawa to northern part of Okinawa. This has been negotiated for years, and we have come to conclusion. But when our new government came in, we started to review this again. But after less than a year, came back to somewhat similar conclusion. And this year, in April, we came up to new approach. That was that originally the idea was to link, make it a package of U.S. force realignment from Okinawa to Guam, the relocation and return of some of the smaller bases south of Katrina in Okinawa should be all in one package, but we decided to delink it. That is the agreement between two governments. This has a huge meaning. One, we could go ahead and lessen the burden on Okinawa, even if relocation and may not proceed. Second, if U.S. forces are to be deployed, not only in Okinawa, but in Guam, Hawaii, and some training in Australia as well, this, and maybe elsewhere training, this will increase the flexibility and sustainability of U.S. forces there in Asia Pacific. So I think we really made a significant step there. I only hope that these agreements by two governments will be endorsed by lawmakers and in this country as well. Today, East Asia situation is getting attention. Sometimes I have all the respect for Economist magazine. I have nothing to do against it, so please don't make a mistake, especially this camera, so I have to be very careful. But Economist have this kind of cover again. Could China and Japan really go to war over these? That's not going to happen. That should not happen as well. I would like to say that, yes, there's a tension now over islands with Korea, with China, Taiwan. But this is not started by us, by Japan. And we have a good historical and legal position on these. However, our position is very clear. We are not going to raise tension and try to take it up emotionally. We would like to calmly deal with this. I have written a piece on Huffington Post of my view yesterday. So if you, after this, if you have time, please take a look at it. Still on the blog page. My view on this is, to put it simple, I would call it three R's. Register opposition very clearly, R, register. Second, restrain from using force or coercion on those matters. And third, respect international law. That's the importance of how to try to deal with these issues. I've written that too, but 2 weeks ago, I was able to go to sports day of Japanese language school. I said my first foreign language is English, my second foreign language is French, but if I were younger, 50 years younger maybe, I would have picked Chinese or Korean either for my second foreign language. And I advise kids that these issues should be dealt by adults. You make friends with the kids of Chinese descent or Korean descent. Now, my last point about cultural relations. I was so lucky as an ambassador here because we had cherry blossoms. Every March or April, I thought I'd get a cold stare from my colleague ambassadors. They are envious, jealous, because they don't have it. No, that's not true. But and especially I was lucky because we had a centennial this year, 100 years of anniversary. We have prepared 3 years or so for that, and that was a huge success. I don't try to go into history 100 years, but just tell you that this gift was a gift from Tokyo people to Washington people. It was in the name of mayor, but that was paid by Tokyo people, citizens. So I dug into documents of Japanese as well as United States and found out that this was really the Tokyo citizens' gift, and I think that is, but however, only four or five people really worked on that for years and realized that. So I really thought that the individual's work can really have the change, make change. And I always say that United States have received two important gifts. Once this Statue of Liberty in New York. The second is this cherry blossoms in Washington. It's not so decent to compare the gifts, but if you try to compare it, Statue of Liberty has some merit because it's all year round there. Cherry blossoms only 1 week. However, you can't distribute Statue of Liberty to 50 states. The trees, you can plant them. And that is exactly what we are doing now. This year, we have given to 36 cities the cherry blossoms. And I hope that these moves will continue. Maybe Washington would not monopolize now, but I don't think Washington people are generous, so they don't mind at all. But this is a really important symbol of Japan-U.S. friendship. Talking about the cultural side, I often hear that there's a problem now. Young Japanese are not coming to the United States. This is often expressed. They don't have guts. They are not. They don't really take risks, and they don't really look for adventure. I don't take that view. I think young kids are smart. They know what's good for their career. So I tell to CEOs of Japanese companies when I meet them that please make a quota of foreign college graduates and let them into your big company and treat them as a cadet and not as just an interpreter. That's what I've been proposing. The second thing is that all the college graduates in Japan has had 8 years of English, 3 years in junior high, 3 years in high school, 2 years in university. Still, many of my compatriots would not speak English. Why? I think there's some fundamental flaw in education. I'm not saying that U.S. Language education is so superb, if I may say. Well, I have to be, I'm still a diplomat for 1 month, so I have to be careful. Now, so my proposal was that we should send public school teachers, Japanese nationals, to United States for some time and let them homestay, let them go to college. And if these people go back, she or he will be teaching class of 30, five classes a year. In 30 years, she or he will be teaching 5,000 students. What a great investment. If one teacher gets better, 5,000 has the possibility to get better. And ex-prime minister said, that's a good idea, let's start it. And already, I told them 2 years ago, and he started already last year. And hundreds teachers came last year. Now another 100 is here. And I'll be meeting them next week too. I think this is a small compared to the whole mass of teachers, but we have to start from somewhere. And I think these projects have to be promoted. Lastly, maybe some of you are beginning to think that I'm speaking so long to avoid questions. No, it's not so. So I'll stop here. But one thing I want to say is that one thing is encouraging between Japan and the United States is that 82% of Japanese feel affinity towards Americans. 84% Americans say they trust Japanese. That's a great number between two countries who fought 6 years ago and have very different cultural heritages. As long as people to people like or trust, I think we can have a optimistic view on our relations. I thank you very much for this occasion.
Do we have another microphone, or should I share with the...
Yes, okay.
Oh. Thank you so much, Ambassador Fujisaki, for your very insightful comments. And I know that the audience is very eager to ask their questions. We're going to transition now to the Q&A. But before we do that, I'm going to abuse my power and the fact that I have the microphone and ask the first question. And this,
I was afraid of that.
And this really touches upon an issue that you discussed in your remarks, the fact that there are fewer Japanese students coming to the United States, and also ties into another point you made about the power of perceptions. And you very compellingly showed us this Economist cover about maybe the United States turning Japanese and the fact that the troubles of the Japanese economy have been overplayed. And I would like to suggest that there is another narrative out there, and that is that Japan is turning inward. And I think that touches upon the fact that we have fewer exchanges, fewer Japanese students coming here. So this is a big picture question, but it has two components. One is whether you think that this is a myth, that Japan is not in fact turning inward, that there could be policies like the ones that you highlighted that could address this, and then we could have a very healthy level of exchange again, or whether in fact there is a shift in the mentality of many young Japanese who may feel that Japan has become a very comfortable place and they don't feel compelled to take the risks of pursuing a career or a studies abroad. And the second question is, if Japan is not turning inward, and you as one of Japan's top diplomats, thinking about the multiple challenges that we face in security, in economic relations, and so forth, where, in which areas can Japan lead the way in, say, the next 5 or 10 years? If you're thinking about the key initiatives that Japan may put forward for the international community, what could we expect? Thank you very much.
First question, I think this inward-looking question. I have asked a Japan Foundation colleague, are the Japanese students really decreasing, those who are going out of country? And I got the figure that except for US and UK, it's not decreasing, it's increasing. So it's a bit of exaggeration to say that all Japanese kids are sort of inward-looking and not going out. But of course, we have to increase more to the United States, and that is exactly what I'm trying to look at. That is to create a job opportunity and also level up English so that they can come. But I was very glad to hear what Miriam-san said, because she said Japan is such a comfortable place so that people would not like to leave. So I'm very happy that I'm going back to such a comfortable place. Second place issue, the policy of trying to contribute to international community, I think that will remain no matter which party of Japan is there. Still, Japan is number two in UN contribution, number one being United States, and number three, UK, four, France, China, Russia, China. But our contribution is France, Russia, more than France, Russia, China added. And that's point one. Point two, the important sort of hot bellies or the hot spots of soft belly or hot spots of the world, Afghan, Pakistan, Palestinian, Iraq. For reconstruction, U.S. is number one. Japan is number two in all these three countries in one area. So we are continuing to do on that path. In 10 years, it's rather difficult to see in the crystal ball, but I don't see the reason why do we have to change the course. Thank you very much.
Can you hear me? Yes. Thank you so much. Now we're going to start the Q&A. I would ask you to please be very concise in your question. There's lots of hands up. And if you can also identify yourself as...
Say that they can make a discussion and not questions, too. Okay. Some people can go on for 10 minutes to make a speech.
No. Please disregard that. All right. Please. Yes, sir. Wait for the mic. It's coming your way. This gentleman in the second row, please.
Hugh Grindstaff, THIS for Diplomats, and we hate to see Ambassador Fujisaki go. The ambassador's wife has been really great for THIS. Thank you very much. Don't worry, Gato. But my question is, Japan's aid for Burma, you're stepping in there where the U.S. can't right now, and would you like to make a comment about that?
Yes, we welcome very much the... new policy of the Tencent government, and that when Prime Minister Noda met, thank you very much, the Prime Minister Tencent, he stated very clearly that we will continue to step up the support to Myanmar, and we have dealt much of the debt issue that they had, and it is true that we have limited our assistance to humanitarian side for a long time in line with the international community. But we are very happy to see that the U.S. is relaxing their sanction too. Thank you very much.
This lady in the brown jacket. Thank you. Oh, yes.
Hi, Ambassador. My name is Nadia Chow with Liberty Time from Taiwan. I know you have to serve your country well and make many friends, including my ambassador from Taiwan. Like Assistant Kirk Campbell said the other days, the Diaoyutai and Senkaku Island dispute actually already caused some damage between Japan with China and Taiwan. I wonder, from your point of view, how could Japan to make up for this damage? And the second question, that some people debate Japan's politics now is driven by the right wing groups. I don't know if you agree with this. From your point of view, do you think there's a misunderstanding? Thank you.
Yes, I would congratulate the promotion of your boss. He's going back to a very important post, I understand. Second, as for the damage, I do not know. Your question was that how Japan should try to... cope with that issue. I think both sides should take a look at very calm, in a calm manner, and not resort to emotion. Now, how I look at this issue. As I said, I have written a piece yesterday, so please take a look at it. My point is that this was not started by Japan, and that we are would like to really deal with restraint and not emotionally, not trying to resort to nationalist sentiment. As for if Japan is going right, I have clearly addressed that issue yesterday in my yesterday piece. So please take a look at it, madam. Thank you very much.
Just behind you, this gentleman.
Okay, my name is Kent Wayne from Taiwan OCAC. Regarding the Senkaku Island, yesterday on the Washington Post, they have a whole page of the Taiwan president, Ma Ying-jeou, have a proposal.
Did you put it?
No. Yeah, Ma Ying-jeou posed a called East China Sea Peace Initiative. My question is, what's your comment about this initiative? Okay, thank you.
I didn't understand.
The Taiwan president proposed a East China Peace Initiative. So I wonder what your comment about his proposal.
I'm sorry, I'm not totally cognizant of the content of the his proposal, so I could not comment it. But my position, as I said, on this island issue is very clearly stated in my piece. So please take a look at it. Thank you very much, sir.
Yes?
Thank you, Ambassador. My name is Jeanine Nguyen with Voice of Vietnamese Americans. I thank you for the leading roles in Asia Pacific. And from all the groups that you said Japan would like to maintain relationship with, I think you name US, Europe, and China and Russia, and somehow I didn't hear Southeast Asia. So I would...
Did I say that? You said that Japan should maintain relations with the U.S., Russia, Europe, China, and did not mention South Asia. Did I hear you right?
I did not say you should, but I just said that maybe I didn't hear what you said. Maybe I missed hearing
you. Yes, you missed
maybe
it.
Maybe you did say that, but I missed hearing
I did not say that okay. Because Southeast Asia is very important for me.
Thank you.
I was in Jakarta. Sudalama.
Thank you.
Sudalama, Tikaputan Yan Lalu.
You think the climate there would be good for cherry blossom too?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm coming back to my point.
Yes, I
thank you for the 3 hours. I thank you for the 3 hours. I think that's very nice of you to suggest the 3 hours. What is that? 3 hours? Register, restrain, and respect. So we would very much hope that constructively Japan would lead the way for Southeast Asia and China in our any disputes from now on to respect the law of the sea. So would you please go in a little more in detail as to vision is for Japan in the next few years?
Japan is not taking issue on the sovereignty issue of the islands in South China Sea, but we think that those issues should be dealt in accordance with international law, and that we hope COC, Code of Conduct, will be adopted as soon as possible.
Let me take on this side of the table. That gentleman, yes, and then we'll go to you.
Okay, thank you. I'm Jim Berger from Washington Trade Daily. And my question is about trade, and I just wanted to say I haven't asked the Japanese ambassador anything about trade in several years, which is good. anyway, my question deals with the TPP. When do you feel that the time will be right for the government to make a decision on TPP? And will that depend, at least in part, on how much progress can be made in the three-way free trade talks with Japan, Korea, and China?
No, I think very frankly, yes, we have this trilateral discussion, China, Korea, and Japan discussing the possibility of free trade area. But as for TPP, we hope that we can come to smooth and early decision on whether or not we should join in the negotiations. However, one thing I would like to add is that it's not only Japanese decision. It's in consultations with other countries. And so what other countries would ask Japan is important too. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the gentleman is standing up next to the camera, please. He has his hand up. Thanks.
Thank you, Ambassador. My name is Dong Hui Yu with China Review News Agency of Hong Kong. In the article published on Huffington Post yesterday, you mentioned that the recent problems have not been started by Japan. Could you please clarify Japan here? Does it refer to the Japanese government or Japanese individual? Because from many American scholars' view, this problem was stirred up by the Tokyo governor who wants to purchase the Diaoyu Senkaku Islands. How do you clarify this concept here? And secondly, the Chinese Foreign Ministry called for Japan to return to the position that recognized that there is a sovereignty dispute over Diaoyu and Senkaku. How would you respond that? Do you think it's a good will to calm down the situation? Thank you.
To your first question, I'm referring to Japanese government. As for the second point that you are saying, our position, the Japanese government's position is clear that that Japan has been have a sovereignty over these islands for since we registered in 1895, and there's no discussion about sovereignty. But what I said is that it's important that we should not make an emotional issue out of this. We should calmly discuss where we can on these issues and always should respect law. And I'm not trying to say that Japan is trying to take unilateral measure on these issues. Thank you very much.
Over here, this lady, sorry I'm making you walk all the way now to the front, but if you can raise your hand so she can identify. Thank you.
Shihoko Goto with the Wilson Center. I actually was intrigued by the fact that you did not mention the power and influence that Japanese corporations have wielded in the past and are expected to wield in the future. Firstly, is there any role the private sector can play in resolving the East China Sea dispute, for instance, by developing joint venture prospects to jointly tap into the natural resources there? Secondly, you mentioned that there is no need to change the course in Japan's future outlook over the next 10 years, that what's worked in the past should work moving forward. Do you believe that the power of Japanese corporations still lies in the manufacturing sector, or do you believe that it can expand elsewhere?
As for Japanese business, I'm not representing Japanese business community, so I could not really speak on behalf of them. But one thing I can say is that I hope these issues now under discussion should not really be translated into business or economic action by one country against other, and this should be totally separated. That is my position. Now, as for our future course, I think that trying to work with the international community, that policy should be continued. But it is true that we have to adapt to a situation. And as for business community, it is true that Japanese business has problems because our neighboring countries, emerging countries, have a huge sort of company, whereas in Japanese companies, we don't have one company, one country, one company style, and several companies are always sort of competing with each other. And if you ask us, we have a system like, I don't know if you call it system, but a system like Silicon Valley, where there's entrepreneurs, incubator, venture capital, and all that, I think we still have not that in the level of California. And I think we have to think about that as well. So I'm not saying that we will stay there, but I think Japanese companies have to find the right way in between if where you have this very vibrant Silicon Valley type of economy here. You have one huge model of a huge corporation in emerging countries. I think Japanese companies have to find the right way of adapting to the situation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Matt Goodman?
Matthew Goodman of the Center for Strategic International Studies.
I thought Ken Lieberthal, Richard Bush, and Matthew Goodman were not allowed to ask questions. They know everything.
I'll ask an easy one. A broad question, which is you've observed U.S. policy towards Japan, of course, but also Asia more broadly over the last 4 years, and you're staying through the election. If you had a chance to meet President Obama or President-elect Romney on the day after the election, what advice would you give them? What would you leave behind as advice for what they should do for the next 4 years vis-a-vis Asia or Japan?
I think what they have been saying all the way, I've been carefully watching, and are quite right in saying that they would put emphasis on the relations with the allies or the friend, like-minded countries, and then discuss with others. And I think that kind of approach to try to align with the your friends first is very important. Sometimes I feel that some politicians try to look for something new and go out and seek something new and forget a bit about good old partner. But I don't think that's happening with either Mr. Obama or Mr. Romney. Thank you very much.
This gentleman.
What else would I say to?
John Zhang with CTI TV of Taiwan. Mr. Ambassador, I'd still like to come back to the tension in the East China Sea,
yes.
Which still remains very high and very dangerous.
Half the population is from China or Taiwan.
We are particularly interested in that issue. If Japan does not recognize that there is a sovereignty dispute over the islands, what is there for Japan, China, and Taiwan to discuss? You don't simply expect China and Taiwan to accept Japanese sovereignty over the issues, even though we are talking about adults dealing with the issue, not kids. This is my first question. What is the way out? What is the way? Do you see, you know, the way out? Second question. What do you think of the way that the United States has stated its position over the island disputes over the last few months? Thank you very much.
As for sovereignty issue, that we have been stating our sovereignty over the issue, and as we have had effective administration over the issue, is nothing new. We have been doing that ever since Okinawa Reversion of 1972. So one thing I have to make clear is that we are not starting something there to start a new position on that. As for you asked the way out, I think we have to really soberly look at the issue calmly, but one thing is not to resort to using force, coercion, and try to really respect each other, and not using too strong words, I think, is important. And I have recognized that, for example, China Chinese administration have controlled the mob after 19th of September. And I think these had been recognized. Yes, thank you very much. I'm sorry, U.S. attitude. U.S. attitude, U.S. has been saying that they do not take position on the sovereignty issue, but have always stated that U.S. security treaty, U.S.-Japan security arrangements would cover those islands. And I think that constitutes an important deterrence. Thank you very much.
This lady, please.
Thank you. Jinyoung Park from IISS. I'm also a South Korean national.
ISS London?
We have an office here in D.C.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
I was there in London.
Yes. I'd like to ask about other impediments to East Asian security cooperation, namely, I guess, different interpretation of the history. So, you know, comfort women, the Yatsugune shrine visits, and some historic textbooks. Do you see any improvements in this on this issue in the future?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Pardon? These history issues are very important. So we have been trying to do at most. I was myself 10 years ago, 15 years ago, official in charge of those issues, and we have worked on Asia Women's Fund in order to deal with these issues. So we do not take it lightly. It's a very important issue, and touches people's sentiment, and it's not easy after you have been you have suffered. It's not easy to say that I did this, so it's okay. It doesn't happen that way. So we have to continue to do everything we can, and I think we have been doing that. It's true that those who have suffered will not say that that's sufficient. It's very difficult, very touchy issue, but I think we'll have to continue to work on those issues. Thank you very much.
Please, this gentleman at the far end.
I'm Mr. Lloyd from Baltimore, and my home country is from the Philippines. And I would like you to give a little bit of enlightenment to the public regarding the comfort women that we have in the Philippines. I know the different sectors of the Japanese government, city by city, are giving apology for this, but what's the point of view of you as a chief diplomat of the United States?
The Japanese government has stated its policy by the statement of Chief Cabinet Secretary, and that still stands. And we have extended our apology. And when we were passing on atonement contribution or money to these comfort women, we have sent, the Prime Minister has sent personally apology letters to those people accepting it as well. So it's not that some local community are doing it. It is a government's policy, has been that way. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That gentleman way back near the wall, please.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Patrick Braden from Global Future. I appreciate all your comments on such a wide range of issues, and one issue that I feel that has been overlooked today is the international child abduction issue. And knowing that Barack Obama has raised it twice with the Prime Minister, Secretary Clinton has raised it about 8 times, Assistant Secretary Campbell has raised it about 50 times, Can you talk to us a little bit about the challenges in Japan to acceding to The Hague and returning some of these illegally kidnapped American children being held in Japan?
Thank you very much for raising that important issue. It was not so easy, but we have decided to join the Hague Convention and was preparing the way and put the our draft law bill to our diet. But because of domestic situation, the bill was did not pass. Did not expire the dates, and we have to try again. But the Japanese government is determined to do that. Thank you very much.
Other question? Yes.
This is Sang Yong-kim of Seoul Shinmun Daily from South Korea. You said that you are not going to go to war over Senkaku or Daidao. So what makes you believe so for sure? I'm wondering that it came from your intuition or gut feeling, or you have some information about the Chinese government.
No, I have trust in the rationality of Chinese leadership as well as Japanese leadership. So I think they should try to find the way. I do not have any intelligence to share with you, sir. But I have all the trust in the leadership's decision and the prioritization of the issues. Thank you very much.
Okay. Yes, Professor Linus.
Thank you. Richard Linus, American University. I'm trying to see the connections between oil policy, natural gas policy, electric policy, and things like long-term planning for transport, for replacing automobiles with electric cars, and your efforts to try to build bridges with the communities in the United States to lead that kind of technological innovation. So where do you see what happening in the next 5 years?
Some of them are separate projects, but we have been promoting, for example, high-speed railway and railway in this country because that would be energy efficient as well, but environmentally friendly as well. And electric cars, it's environmentally friendly as well, so that is the direction for the future. But some companies would think it's hybrid is more realistic at the time. So, but we have to see what would be the right energy mix. But compared to, if you look at some history, for example, in 1970s, Muskie Law was proposed in this country, and it was not adopted here. But Japanese government thought that was the way to go. Against the wish of big companies in Japanese automobile company, they said this is a huge burden to Japanese auto industry. But they then, in the end, it paid off because this was so widely accepted by consumers in this country as well and helped Japanese auto industries to export. And then now making more here in the United States than exporting. So many trials has to done, and I think in energy area, electric or whatever is a possibility as well, and we have to find the right energy mix. Thank you very much, sir.
Way back, there's the lady. Yeah, thank you.
Hi, Yujin. Sorry, intern with Brookings. So, Ambassador, I'm sorry for putting you on the hot seat, but again, regarding the Senkaku Diaoyu Island, I have one question. So, was there anything that surprised you regarding either Japan government's response or China government's response towards the crisis, or you more or less predicted the proceedings? Thanks.
I am not an expert for predicting things, and I don't have a crystal ball, so I would not, and I'm not in charge of policy on that, so I'm just an observer. And so I would not try to describe my personal feeling on that, but what I can say is that governments should always try to see that we cannot elevate the tensions over these issues to an extent that we cannot control them. And I understand that the Chinese will share that view too. If you ask me if I have any intelligence, I don't, but I have all the confidence in the rational decisions thinking of Chinese people. So I'm sorry, I cannot say that about predictions. This is not what I'm good at. Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to wrap up very soon. So I see two hands. You had a second question, right? And you also had a question. So if we could please first this lady and then the gentleman.
Thank you. My questions follow up the first one. What is your view on the deterrence alliance force in the Southeast Asia, including Japan, the Philippines, and all ASEAN countries?
I'm sorry.
The potential of forming a deterrence alliance with all ASEAN countries just to protect and support the prosperity of the region.
I think as for Japan, our constitution prescribes that we can use our force only for our self-defense. So we are not trying to use the forces for the deterrence for other countries as well. But the fact that U.S. has forces in Asia-Pacific, not only in Japan, but in elsewhere. Philippines had Subic and Clark, but not anymore, but had a deterrence over the region. And I don't know if that will happen, but for Japan to see that countries, as I said, U.S. forces dispersed, I'm not talking about Philippines here, but Guam, Hawaii, Australia, and widespread would increase the deterrence capability and sustainability of U.S. forces as well.
Thank you. And the last question.
Steve Winters, local researcher. I just want to say a very famous person here wrote a book called Diplomacy, and a lot of people for decades now have sworn by it. But in my opinion, your example that you presented to us during your time here, it tells us more about diplomacy than any book. The question is this. With this latest Armitage Nye report, Mr. Armitage has been very repeatedly stated that, at least in their view, Japan is facing a basic fundamental decision. Will Japan remain, as in their terminology, a first-tier country, or are they going to not remain in that position in the global framework? And I asked this very distinguished Mr. Packard over at SAIS about this.
George Packard?
Yes. And he said, well, I don't agree with that at all. I'm not a tier person. He said, I don't think in those terms. But could you enlighten us, are people in Japan thinking in these terms, or are they not thinking in these terms?
You mean you're asking me to choose between Packard and Armitage?
No. I think these are Americans talking about Japan, but tell us what the Japanese are thinking.
I think when I was saying that our basic policy towards international community has been evolving, but on the steady course, and we would not try to use forces. We would register a position, but we will try to do at most to cooperate with the international community. For example, it didn't come up today, but the Iran sanction, we have been continuing to go along with, although energy is so important, still we do everything that is required. And I think the first tier or second tier or third tier or whatever is some others to judge if you are first tier or second tier, and some I don't want to sound cynical or something, but some countries would like to classify these in the report, or government report or something, that you are class A, class B or whatever. I think we don't do that too. And but it is true that we should continue to, in our capacity, do at most to go along with the international community to in foreign aid as well, because this is the way that Japan could contribute, and that is the decision that Japanese has made post-war, and I think that has really made Japan today, and the basic, this philosophy is not, I think, shaken. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Fujisaki. This has been a remarkable occasion and a wonderful discussion. If you could please join me in thanking Ambassador Fujisaki.
Thank you very much.